shit destroyed him, and I think he wants to know who destroyed me, too. Everyone wants to know that. Well, they used to, when people gave two shits about my life. I'm pretty sure I'm nobody again. Pretty sure no one cares now. Lucinda has asked me more times than I can count. Did they abuse me? Yes. Did they hurt me? Yes. But not in the way people think. And I don't feel like telling her because I don't think she would understand. X would, though. I have decided to write it down for him and him only. I will make him burn it and forget it. And when I leave this house, leave him behind, I'm going to leave the past behind, too. I feel different now. I'm not sure if it's confidence, maybe not that, but it's a willingness to see past my limitations and look forward to my challenges. I want to play that show. I think I'm going to do it. There's a reason I didn't call a cab at the house and instead cut through the city by way of the gardens. There's a bank of payphones near the entrance. I had a few coins in my purse, but I'm glad I have a credit card when I get to them, because they don't take coins. This world, I swear, it moves way too fast for me. I get my card out, swipe it like I do in the cab, and then press the numbers I looked up on the internet before I left this morning. Dr. Chatwell speaking, she says. Lucinda, I say. A pause. Evangeline? Did you... No, I say quickly. No, I'm not quitting. I just wanted to call and tell you... Thank you. I think things are going very well. I'm even meeting someone for lunch today. What's going on? She asks. You're not supposed to... Lucinda, I say, sighing at her reaction. I make the rules, okay? She lets out one of those scoffing laughs, the incredulous kind. And if I want to call and tell you thank you, then I will. She's smiling, I can tell.
Who are you having lunch with?
I can't say. You wouldn't approve.
What?
She asks, slight panic in that word. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I want to say. Talk soon. Bye. I hang up the phone, listen to the beeping the computer inside makes as it completes my transaction, then hike my purse up onto my shoulder, adjust my sunglasses, and walk out the other side of the gardens and back into the city. I catch a cab a few blocks down, get dropped off in front of the courthouse, and contemplate going inside to see if I can find Jordan before he finds me. I decide against that. It's not the fast beating of my heart, either. It's not the feeling of too many people, even though that feeling is there. It's because I'd like to be early today. I don't want to share a table with some stranger who wants to talk to me. I want to watch Jordan when he comes in and not be distracted. He's handsome, and I want to study his face. I want to imagine what it would be like to talk to him, date him, fuck him. So I get to the coffee house at 11:40. The lunch crowd is just starting to pick up, but there are several open tables. I ask for one in the back, in the corner where I can hide in the shadows. I take my scarf off as my heart begins to gallop inside my chest, but I did that yesterday, so it feels a little familiar. I leave the gloves and sunglasses on. I order the club with avocado without looking at the menu and feel like a local, which makes me smile. Not because I'm tricking anyone, but because it's true after all. Practice makes perfect. And it's just as easy to lie to other people as it is myself, which is kind of a relief. I spend the next 20 minutes watching the door, so eager to see the man I came for. And when the minutes tick off and he's late, I have a sick feeling in my stomach that this whole idea is stupid, and I'm stupid, and I will sit here all afternoon, by myself, and never get the reward I'm after. To watch, instead of being the one watched. But then he's there, at 12:09, pushing through the crowd, leaning into the ear of the hostess, who points him to the counter, where he walks up with the confidence of a man who has nothing to fear and orders a sandwich. He's not staying, I realize. If I want to talk to him, I will have to make a move. I put both gloved hands on either side of the plate holding the club sandwich I won't be eating and begin to rise.
Angela!
My head swivels at the name and I sit back into my chair, surprised that Mike, the interloper from yesterday, is making his way to my table.
Ha!
He says, pointing to the empty chair on the other side of the table.
You saved me a seat. See, one good deed yesterday gets me a seat today.
He says that as he unwraps his scarf, takes off his gloves, shoving them into his coat pocket, and sits down. Jesus fucking Christ. I sigh. Hello, I say. I didn't expect to see you again.
I'm here every day, he says, looking up at the waitress to say, I'll have what she's having, pointing to my plate.
The waitress nods, and then Mike turns back to me.
So, how's work today?
Jordan is paying for his lunch. He's going to leave in like 2 minutes.
People treating you good over there?
Mike nods his head, indicating the government buildings across the street. Fine, yes. Jordan is checking his watch, and when he looks up, he's staring right at me. He smiles, then gives me a two-fingered wave, almost a salute. I put my gloved hands on the table again, one on either side of my plate, and this time I stand up.
Hey, Mike says, covering one of my hands. Do you want to go out sometime? You know, like a real date or something? Dinner? Maybe drinks after work tonight?
I stare down at Mike, unsure what to say. I don't think I've ever been asked that question before.
What? He asks. Why do you look so surprised? Don't tell me people aren't beating down your door to ask you out. You're so beautiful.
No, I snap, rudely. And then I sigh because I don't want to be rude to this man. He was nice to me yesterday, and I really needed his help at the time. He kind of saved me in a way. I'm sorry, I say. I didn't mean for it to come out like that. I don't date people from work. Which is a lame excuse because obviously I don't work with him. But he shrugs it off.
It's okay.
I have to go, I say, fishing into my wallet to find a $20 bill and placing it on the table next to my uneaten sandwich. I turn around, find Jordan gone. My heart skips a beat. Then I see the back of his winter coat, passing through the front door. I rush after him, intent on getting what I came for. Which is stupid, I realize that, because I have no idea what I came for. Did I expect him to, what, fuck me in the bathroom? Why? Why does that thought even come to mind? When I get to the door, a whole crowd of people are entering, and I have to say, excuse me, several times as I push past them, oblivious to their reactions. And when I get outside, I look around, wildly. People pass me, staring, their watching eyes glued to mine, entrancing me in the poison of their gaze. I don't have my scarf on. They can see most of my face, which sends my heart racing again, but for all the wrong reasons. And by the time I hastily put it on, Jordan has disappeared. Again. Fuck.
Chapter 34. Ixion. I'm waiting for her when she comes home. My camera's trained on the front door like a cat watching a hole in the wall for a mouse. She is rumpled, hair tousled, breathing hard, cheeks red from the cold, and beautiful in all her disheveledness. I feel like maybe this is the real Evangeline, that this stupid goal of spying on Jordan has taken her somewhere she's been before, but hasn't been back to in a very long time. Like it's giving her power. What? I have no idea. But I think I really like the powerful music maker. She takes her coat off, throws it on the floor, then her gloves and her hat and her sunglasses. She looks up at the chandelier, at me, looking at her through the black bulb. What the fuck? She screams. Why can't I just catch a break? I mean, I'm out there, putting myself out there, and he even looked at me, waved. And the stupid guy who thinks, I don't know what he thinks, is distracting me, asking me out on a date. A date? She shakes her head. Like the idea makes no sense to her. I just want a few moments to spy on Jordan. Is that too much to ask? Where else does he go? You have to know. Tell me. I feel like I'm making an effort here and the universe is just laughing in my face. She squints her eyes up at the camera bulb. Are you laughing at me? I chuckle. But say nothing. Not even a push or the intercom to let her know I'm listening. I know you're listening. She says, eyes fierce, expression defiant and vulnerable all at the same time. Say something. I take a sip of the coffee I got while I was out. Enjoy it. X, she says. Are you there? X. Just hearing her say my name makes me want her. It's so close to what Jordan calls me. X. X. So close.
I'm going upstairs, she says.
Good, I say, but only to myself.
I'm going to put the blindfold on, she says.
Perfect, I say.
I'm going to wait for you.
I'm going to make you wait. She starts walking up the stairs, then turns about halfway up to stare at me again.
You'll come, right?
My heart skips.
You will,
she says, trying to convince herself.
I know this probably isn't easy for you, and you probably have a million better things to do with your life right now than babysit me.
She pauses.
But I'm glad we're doing this. I think I like you.
And with that proclamation, she turns her back to me and disappears. I am so stunned at her admission. I don't even follow her on the cameras. I just sit there in front of the monitor wondering how I got here, and wondering what I did to deserve this chance. Because that's what it seems like all of a sudden. Not that I'm here helping her, but she's here helping me. The stories we exchange are sad, but beautiful, too. They're desperate, but bring a sense of peace. It makes me wonder if she's getting better because of me, or Jordan. I'm dying to know the answer to that question. Especially since I'm starting to figure out why I'm really here. And it's not her. But I want it to be her. I don't make her wait too long. Not because I'm feeling generous or anything. But because I think I need her tonight. I think I'm going to enjoy this a lot. Because I sense that she's not as fucked up as she thinks. And our time together in this house is drawing to an end. It hasn't even been a week, but we're almost done here. Almost, but not quite. So I get up, take off my clothes, check the mirror, and wonder if I should shave. Decide, no. I want to eat her pussy, and I want the stubble on my jaw to scratch the sensitive skin on her inner thighs raw. I want her to remember what we do at night when, tomorrow, she leaves here again looking for the man who isn't me. When I climb the stairs leading up to the third floor bedroom, I realize I didn't check to see if she was wearing the blindfold. She could be waiting in there to ambush me, eyes open. She'll know everything, if she is. But I open the door without knocking anyway, trusting her. She's lying down on top of the white down comforter, legs straight, arms at her side, the tie wrapped around her eyes just like she's supposed to be. Trusting me, too. She exhales as I stand over her, sensing that I'm close. Maybe fearful I will leave if she moves. She stays absolutely still.
Touch me,
she breathes. I want to talk to her so badly. I want to say so many things about what she's been writing in our book. I want her to know I'm listening. I'm here. I want to help her. And I want to know what she thinks about me, the things I've told her. Her hand reaches out. Finds my bare leg. She sucks in a breath, surprised that I'm naked. But then her palm flattens on my thigh, her fingertips stroking me softly. I close my eyes, lost in her touch, the moment, not caring that everything we're doing here will end soon. I have her now, and that's all that matters. My knee sinks the mattress next to her hip. The other leg swings over her body until her legs are between mine. There's a crinkle in her forehead, like she's closing her eyes tightly underneath the silk tie, not wanting to see the truth, but eventually, she'll have to. She's gonna come to terms with her life. Maybe I'll come to terms with mine, too. I stare at her face. Her tongue darts out, swipe across her lips, wets them. Smile on my face is between her legs, a moment later, licking. My tongue probing between the lips of her pussy until I find her clit. I take it gently between her teeth. She whines, then lifts her hips up, pushing my face deeper. She tries to open her legs, give me better access, but I hold my position, not yet ready to give her what she needs, still enjoying the tease.
"Take my blindfold off,"
she says. I stop. Her hands find my head, urge me to continue. But I just stare up her body, past her peaked nipples to her sweet face. I shake my head, no.
"Please,"
she begs, still pushing on my head, hips still moving, like she wants to grind my face on her pussy. I ignore her verbal request and sit back, taking both her hands in mine as I pull her up, as I lie back. She gets what I'm doing. She gets me. So as I lie back, she scoots up, and even though I won't let her take off the blindfold, I will grant her nonverbal request. Her legs settle on either side of my head as she lowers her pussy down onto my waiting tongue. I close my eyes and lick her, tongue sweeping back and forth, stopping at the nub of her clit to flick it until she arches her back so far the tips of her long, dark hair brush against my hands holding onto her ass. She lifts up just a little, giving me more access, and then begins to rub her pussy against my unshaven jaw. She will have a rash in the morning, and I'm going to make sure she thinks about what I'm doing to her all day long. She's inhaling, exhaling, long, breathy pants that get louder and louder as she slides her pussy against my chin. My tongue tickles her clit, making her squeal, and then her hands slap down on the bed above my head, and she really begins to fuck my face. I push a finger into her asshole, remembering how much she liked that last time, and decide I will fuck her in the ass before she leaves this house for good. I will take her every way I can think of before I let her go. She comes in my mouth, my tongue lapping up the gushing wetness of her climax. Her legs straighten, flatten against the outside of my thighs as she slides down my body. For a second, her blindfold slips, and I think, shit. But she adjusts it, puts it back into place, still sucking in air like she will never get enough. Her body trembling slightly, her muscles fatigued from suspending herself over my face. I flip her off me, pin her to the bed, and then allow myself one more transgression. I say, "Now it's my turn," in a whisper so low it barely counts as words.
Chapter 35. Evangeline. "Yes," is the only answer I have for him tonight. I will do anything to keep this man with me right now. I know he's going to walk out. He always walks out. Leaves me here in this strange bedroom that I now think of as our room alone. And he's going to do that again tonight. Maybe forever. Maybe I'll never truly know him beyond the sex and the words on the page that come after. But right now, it's enough. More than enough. He flips me over in such a rough, quick manner I gasp, fear shooting through my body, but then, oh, Jesus. He's on top of me, his mouth kissing my back, his leg kicking mine open, spreading me wide to give him access. His hard cock pushes against the curve of my ass, then his hand is there, guiding it between my legs, rubbing the wetness I made for him. He slips inside me, stretching my pussy open with his wide girth, lowering himself, pushing himself deeper and deeper until he touches something inside me that makes me bite my lip and stifle a scream. He stops, waits, leans his face down into my neck, and whispers, "You okay?" in my ear, his soft breath just a tickle against my skin. I don't know why two stupid words in the middle of sex with a stranger mean so much to me, but they are everything. I swallow down tears and nod my head. "Yes, don't stop." He goes slow after that, still pushing himself deep inside me, his hips rocking on my ass cheeks, his arms balancing himself, pushing into the mattress on either side of my head. I can smell him. It's the smell of snow, and the city, and all the things I've been missing these past 12 years. And even though we've been rough with each other all the other nights we've been together, we are calm tonight. Like this is more than sex. I know it's not true. I know why he's here. I know what he's doing. but for some reason it doesn't matter. He's still here, which is more than I can say for anyone else. I want to see you, I say. He leans down into me again, his mouth on my neck, kissing and nipping at my earlobe. And maybe that's all I really want, his consideration as he struggles to deny me so he can keep his secrets. I do see you, I say, coming to a conclusion. And I don't need eyes to do it, because I have your words, and they don't lie. He huffs a breath into the long strands of my hair. A laugh, I realize. But he's not laughing at me. What I said makes him happy. It's a happy laugh. Come, he whispers. Come for me again, Evangeline. And when he says my name, I know him. It excites me, and he begins to move faster now, his grinding more pronounced, his movements more exaggerated, his cock slipping in and out of my slick pussy so easily he has to thrust it further and further inside me to get the friction he needs. He fucks me hard enough to push me up the bed, until my head is bumping into the soft upholstered headboard. My palms flatten on the fabric to give him the resistance he needs. I arch my back, pushing my ass up and into his fast-rocking hips, and when his fingers slide under my body and find the little nub of my clit, electricity shoots up my stomach. He strums me the way you strum an instrument. He plays me. It makes me think of music and applause and all the good things that came with being child Evangeline. His other hand grabs my breast, squeezing so hard I cry out. This time he knows it's not pain, but pleasure. And he doesn't stop to ask me if I'm okay. He just knows. I want to come inside you, he says, and I don't care what happens. I whine so loud my yes echoes off the ceiling. No one in this room gives a good goddamn about consequences. We come together. For the first time in my life, I come at the same time as the man on top of me. He bites my neck. Sticks his fingers in my mouth, pushing them towards the back of my throat. I suck on them, imagining the way I will suck his cock tomorrow night before I let him fuck me, and enjoy wave after wave of climax rushing through my body. He falls off to the side, breathing hard, like a man after sex. Something I knew once, but lost. Something I want again, with him. X, I whisper, turning my blind face toward his spent body. Come here, he says, pulling me in close to him, wrapping his arms around my body. Come here and be still. No talking, he whispers. Just be still with me. I fall asleep, I guess, safe in the arms of my stranger, my watcher, my protector, because that's what he feels like. When I wake, it's still dark, the middle of the night, I think. But the little moon nightlight is on, and there's a note on the bedside table. It says, My name is Ix, not X. Call me Ix from now on. I smile as I clutch the note in my hand. I have his real name. It's a weird name, for sure. But it's not X, and it's not Stranger, and it's not Watcher. I look up at the camera. I don't know if he can see me in the dark, but I can see him, in my mind. In my dreams, in my future. Ix, I say to the camera. Very nice to meet you.
Chapter 36. Ixian. God, this woman. Where has she been all my life? My phone rings. I know who it is. Jordan has been calling all night. When I got back to my little room, there were already several messages and texts. All saying the same thing. Call. Me. Now. In that commanding tone of voice, even in the text. I answer because why not? Yep, I say into the phone. I'm sort of impressed at the amount of indifference I can conjure up in a single syllable. I almost feel like I'm channeling Jordan, because right now, I do not give one flying fuck about him. And that's a first. In a long-ass time. Fucking Jordan has consumed my life, I realize. Ever since shit went wrong with Augustine, I've been dwelling. What the fuck is happening over there? What did he mean? I ask. Evangeline just found the note, and I'm obsessed with zooming in on her face, trying to reach her expression as she reads it. Jordan is blabbing on about something, but I tune him out. She smiles. Then she looks up at me, says,
X, very nice to meet you.
What the fuck was that? What was what? I say automatically. Was that her? Talking to you? What do you want? I'm fucking doing my job, man. I'm watching her right now. Did she call you X? Dude, you're hallucinating. Why are you calling me? What's happening over there? Nothing. Why? She called her therapist today. On, like, a payphone. Did she? I ask, sort of laughing about that. Well, she broke her phone the first day she was here. Smashed the screen to bits. And even though she asked me for a new one, I didn't get her one. What did she say to her doctor? She thanked her and said she was meeting someone for lunch. Who the fuck was she meeting for lunch? Well, I say, turning away from the monitor. Fucking woman is way too distracting. And I'm getting the impression that Jordan is feeling me out about something. Something I don't want him to feel me out about. That's nice, I guess. This weird-ass treatment plan is working then, right? She left the house. Where did she go? Dude, I say. I'm not sure that's any of your business. You're not her doctor. I'm your employer. I laugh. Kinda loud. Fuck you. I know what you're doing, he says. No, I really don't think you do. Because if you did, you wouldn't be on the phone with me right now. You'd be here in my face asking what the actual fuck. Stay the fuck away from this woman. Do you hear me? Or what? You're fired. Pack your shit. No. I say, so calm. So steady. No. She needs this, Jordan. So put your petty bullshit with me aside and do something for someone else for once. I hear his incredulous laugh just before I end the call and turn my ringer off. Let him come over. I'd love to have another face-to-face with Jordan Wells. When I look back at the monitors, Evangeline is lying back down. And if I look very hard, I think I can still see a smile on her face. I take out our book and read her last entry again. I'm tired of the poems. I'm tired of the pretty words, all dressed up to make it shine and take the trophy of first prize. I'm tired of the dream I never dreamed, for it wasn't mine and no one cared if they stole my youth or my talent or my soul. I was just a number, a diamond ring made to sing, then forsaken and left shaken. My father sold me like a thing that can be sold. I am not a thing. He is not a king. And I'd rather die in the dark than be told this is my purpose in life. Jesus. Sold? I shake my head and hope that was a metaphor for how her parents used her. Because clearly they did use her. But I can't shake the bad feeling creeping up on me. Like something just happened but I missed it. Or something's coming and I can't see it. Stop being stupid, Ixion. It's a fucking game. And you're both winning, so who cares? Just write your next entry and leave her the book. What she does with it after that is up to her. I pick up the pen, but just hold it over the page, unsure of what to say next. A text dings on my phone and I almost ignore it, because all I want to do is think about the girl upstairs and what I need to tell her next. And after I read that text, I wish I had ignored it, because this changes everything.
Chapter 37. Evangeline. In the morning, I can't get down to the kitchen fast enough. My feet trip over themselves trying to skip down steps. I bounce into the hallway, sliding around the corner, eager to get back to our story. Our book isn't there. Ix? I ask the ceiling. Where's your story? This is the end. You can't deny me the end. It's a joke, said jokingly. Because of course it is. Because there's no way he'd do that to me. Because I know him so well now. I know almost all his secrets, and this was the last secret. The final piece of information that will open him up to me completely. But there's nothing but silence echoing back in my head. So I wait. I make coffee. I eat the almost spoiled raspberries left in the fridge, and I wait. But he never says anything. No notes materialize. I even get up and walk around the house, conveniently disappearing from the kitchen to give him a chance to come out of whatever secret room he's hiding in and leave me the final chapter of our story. I even get dressed, go outside, and swing on that stupid family swing for a while, hoping that when I go back inside, our book, the story of us, will be there waiting for me. And next to it a new note, an apology. Sorry for making you wait. But it isn't. He didn't write that. There is no apology. There is no book. It's like he's forsaken me. Why? I have an urge to write. Every morning I've been writing back to him. I have the poem nearly composed in my head. It's murky and sad and reveals secrets that I was, for once, ready to reveal. I was going to give him the last piece of my puzzle, too. But he never shows. And I can't write the poem anywhere else but in our book. That's the only place it belongs. The only place it could possibly exist. So it sits up there in my head like a black cloud hanging over me, like a threat. Like a menace. Like this is an omen of something very, very bad. And unlike the last time he made me angry, I have no urge to break things. It's like I don't have the energy I once did, or the anger, or whatever it was that was fueling my darkness. I am ready to step into the light, but the light is gone. The stupid clock is gonging off the hours, and when it gongs off 11 tones in a row, I make a decision. Fuck it. I'm going to meet Jordan. I get dressed, put on my scarf, my gloves, my hat, my coat, my sunglasses. I call for the cab, and I wait outside for it to come. I actually wait outside. And when it does come, I get in and find it to be stifling hot because stupid Denver is having one of those sunny days in the dead of winter, like it's prone to do. Maybe if I don't play my show and get over this bullshit, I will move somewhere colder, somewhere the sun refuses to shine. I fantasize about this. Someplace far, like Alaska, or Iceland, someplace where the darkness is welcome. But then I recall some lesson from childhood, that the sun never sets in the summer in those places, and then I feel like the whole fucking world is against me for some reason. Why? I have to take off my gloves and my scarf because I'm sweating underneath all this garb, and even though I really want to take my hat off, I don't. And not because I want to stay covered up, but because my hair is a mess. I didn't really pay much attention to it when I was leaving, and today I will talk to Jordan, and I don't want him to see me as the woman with the fucked up hair. I pay the stupid cab driver using the stupid machine on the back of the headrest and get out of the cab, slamming the door behind me, and stand there, looking up at the stupid coffee house and the people outside, and I wonder, maybe for the first time, why a guy as beautiful as Jordan comes to this stupid place every goddamn day. Are there not better places? Less busy places? I mean, is the goddamned club sandwich so goddamned good here that these people can't find somewhere else to eat one? I push my way inside, probably rudely, but I don't care. I've been coming here all week with a goal in mind, and every day I've been denied. And this day, of all days, is not a day for denial. I can't take it. I really can't. So I stand there, combing the place, looking for Jordan, and who do I see? Fucking Mike. But I take a second look at fucking Mike, because fucking Mike is already sitting with someone, a woman who is not me, obviously, and fucking Mike glances at me, then averts his eyes. Averts his eyes. Like I am someone not worthy of being seen. I seethe. What the ever-loving fuck is going on with this day? Just one today? The hostess asks me. Yes, I manage to say, somewhat civilly, I might add. Table for one, I say it loud. Loud enough that Mike over near the window hears me and once again glances in my direction, but then quickly looks away, pretending I'm not even here as he talks to the woman across from him like they're together or something. When I know good and goddamn well he's got no girlfriend because just yesterday he was trying to get me to go out with him. Huh. So that's his game. He's with someone who will go out with him for drinks after work. Good. Good for him. I'm not here to see him anyway. I'm here to see Jordan. Right this way, the hostess says. So I follow her, and she takes me all the way to the back, in the shadows, where a goddamned tree in a pot is blocking my view of the door. And I really want to say, hey, can I have another table? You know, like a good one? But I realize there's no other tables. This is the last one. And I'm probably lucky I didn't have to cajole Mike into letting me sit at his table as a third wheel. So I shut up, sit down, and order the stupid club with the magic avocado and wait for Jordan to appear. But he doesn't. An hour later, I'm still there, my club sandwich reduced to a bit of bread crust, and the lunch crowd has all gone back to work, alone, as usual. Is there anything else I can get you? My waitress asks. No, I say, no longer manic with purpose, but defeated with disappointment. Just the check. Which she has ready, pulling it out of her apron pocket and setting it on the table, like I've been sitting here too long and she's waiting for me to disappear so she can seat someone else. I pay and go outside, ready to just get in a cab and go the hell home, and there's no cabs, not one in sight. So I start walking towards the Botanic Gardens, because at least I live next to a major landmark and there's signs everywhere, hoping for a cab. But every single one of them passes me by. Because of course they do. This is like everyone needs a cab day and they all have passengers already. By the time I stumble through the gardens nearly an hour later, I'm dead tired. But hopeful. Hopeful that Ix is at home, waiting for me. Perhaps out of his mind with worry. But when I key in the code to the gate, I feel despair washing over me. And when I get inside and look up at the chandelier bulb, I know. I feel it in my gut. He's not even here. I drop my purse on the floor and only then realize I left my gloves and scarf in the cab on the way over to the coffee house. I walked all the way home uncovered except for sunglasses and a coat. And I didn't even notice. This should make me feel good. That finally there is something in my life that trumps my stupid fear of being watched. But I wasn't even seen today. I was nobody. Mike didn't even see me. Ix has left me, and all I want right now is to be seen by him. I go upstairs, all the way upstairs, take off my clothes, lie on the bed naked, and then fish the blindfold out from under the pillow and tie it around my eyes. I will wait, I decide. I will wait just like this until he comes for me. I wait a long time. Hours and hours. And in that time, my mind goes wild with the things that have been happening here, both under this roof and at the coffee house. The suspicions form in my head, the clues leading me down a path. Several times I make up my mind, and several times I change it. But no matter how hard I try, the idea lingers. Ix isn't who I think he is.
Chapter 38. Ixion. By the time I leave Chella's tea house, it's dark. I didn't mean to stay so long. Didn't even mean to go. Her text last night was vague, but it was enough to plant ideas in my head. Enough to make me question everything. I didn't mean to say so much to her. We're not exactly friends, and I barely know her. But she knows enough. More than most. And she had a bit of information she wanted to share with me, just in case I wasn't aware. I was not aware. Her information ripped my world apart in too many ways to describe, so I don't bother summing it up in my head. It's just sad. Sad that people can be so manipulative, so self-centered, so fucking filled with lies that they can't even tell the difference between honesty and deceit. I'm careful with Jordan's Mercedes as I pull into the carriage house, even though I want to crash this motherfucker into the side of the house. Even more cautious as I peer over the gate to the garden, afraid Evangeline might be outside. But she isn't. Even after what Charlotte told me today, I'm not mad at Evangeline. That girl doesn't have a dishonest bone in her body. She had nothing to do with Jordan's stupid fucking game. She's not even a player, just a piece to be moved around the chessboard. Like me. Fuck that. I'm not a piece. I'm a player. In fact, this is my fucking game. Isn't it? Am I delusional? Crazy like I thought Evangeline to be? She's not, but neither am I, especially after what Shella told me today. Fucking Jordan. Now I remember why I hate him. Why I left and never looked back. Why I never wanted to come here in the first place. I was suspicious, but not suspicious enough, apparently. I walk down the path that leads to the back steps. Take them two at a time until I'm at the bottom, and key in the code to get inside. A huge feeling of relief washes over me as I close myself up inside. And for a second, I wonder if that's how Evangeline felt all those years she locked herself up inside. Did she feel that relief when she came home? If so, I can relate. I want nothing more than to block out the world right now, just be alone in my aloneness. Her body, lying prone on the bed up in the master bedroom, makes me look at the monitor. But the blindfold she's wearing makes me deflate with anguish. She's waiting for me. I can't do it tonight, Evangeline. I just can't. There's too much bullshit rattling around in my head. And if I go to you, you'll know. You'll feel it. I'll ruin all the good I've done, and I can't. I just can't fucking do it. But of course I can't tell her that. I can't tell her anything. I could do the little intercom crackle, but that would invite more discussion on the matter. It would open it up, and I want to keep everything closed right now. I can't. So I just sit in the chair and watch like I'm supposed to, and pick up the notebook to finish the story. I don't get far because she sits up in bed.
I know you're here now. I felt something. The rumble of a car nearby. The vibration of a door closing inside this house. I know you're here. And you had better come to me right now and tell me why. Why did you leave this morning? Why didn't you finish the story? I had a poem for you. All written up in my head and I had nowhere to write it.
Fuck.
I went to see Jordan and he didn't show up.
Fuck again.
But you were there, weren't you?
Mike. What the fuck?
Was it fun? Watching me wait? Was it fun when you paraded another woman in my face? Was it fun? She stresses the word hard now. When I had to leave alone? Did you know I walked home? All the way home?
She's visibly shaking, and the image of her wearing the blindfold is disturbing. I reach for the intercom, press the button, and say, take off the blindfold and go to sleep. I'm not coming.
Fuck you!
She yells.
If you won't come to me, I'll go to you.
She stands up, blindfold still on, and walks across the room like she can see without eyes. She can't. She trips over the rug and falls on her hands and knees. Evangeline! I bark into the intercom, my voice booming, louder now than it's ever been in her presence. Take off the blindfold and go to bed. She just shakes her head as she gets uneasily to her feet. She stumbles over the rug again, but this time catches her fall with a hand on the bedside table. She feels along the wall, her fingertips now her eyes, until she comes to the door. She pulls it open. She stands at the top of the stairs. And then she steps down.
Chapter 39. Evangeline. I slip, my heels skidding off the polished wood stairs and land on my ass. The hit is hard and bruising, and I slide down several more stairs before I catch hold of the railing and stop the fall. Somewhere in the house, somewhere far away, I hear a door bang open, as if hitting a wall. And for some stupid reason I cannot fathom, I wonder if the doorknob made a hole in the sheetrock. Footsteps echo after that, coming up from below. So he's in the basement. I hold onto the railing as I make my way down to the second floor, my fingertips gripping the wood tightly. That fall really fucking hurt, and I'm going to have a giant bruise on my ass tomorrow. Go. Back. Upstairs. He's panting out the words, very out of breath, which is why they come out like three separate sentences. They're not mean, though. Not a command. More of a request. One I choose not to take into consideration. Come with me, then, I say, pretty calm for the circumstances. I don't want to be alone today. It was a rough day. I'm tired. I draw in a huge breath. I need to be with you.
I had a hard day, too. I'm tired, too. And I need to be alone.
I realize This is the first time I've really heard his true voice. Without the static of the intercom or being whispered so low into my ear, it almost didn't count as speech. It's deep and rough, like his jaw under the touch of my fingertips that left the tender skin between my legs sore with a rash, like the chiseled muscles of his stomach, the sculpted shoulders rounding out his arms. But I can't help but shake the feeling that hearing him is very bad, like he's giving up a part of himself he should still be saving. Like, then let's spend the night together, I say, desperate. It takes every bit of self-control not to lift the blindfold away from my eyes and look at him. But that would spoil the game for sure. It really will be over, and I'm not ready to stop playing. Not yet.
I can't, he says.
It was you, wasn't it? You're Mike.
I'm not Mike. Don't be dumb. That guy is just another sad, in-it-for-the-money player. Fucking tool. Just like Jordan.
Jordan didn't show today, I say, voice quivering. I sat there and waited for him. He never came. Ix lets out a long breath, like he really is tired.
I'm not surprised. He had a lot going on.
I am desperate to keep him here. I feel compelled to say something that will convince him, change his mind about whatever it was that ruined his day and make him spend his night with me. I consider my options. I don't have many, but I refuse to spend tonight alone. I need him. Something. I cannot stand to be invisible now, not after being seen by him for so many days. So I say, give me your story and I'll go back upstairs.
I didn't write it.
Liar, I whisper. That's a lie, Ix. I know you wrote it. The only reason you've been writing it down at all was to get to the end. And this was supposed to be the end.
Evangeline, he says.
I can almost imagine him pinching the bridge of his nose in frustration.
I can't tonight, okay? It needs to be revised. So tomorrow.
No, I say. I'm going home tomorrow. He pauses for several seconds. So long I start counting. And when I get to 10, he takes a deep breath.
Why?
Because we're done here. I'm cured, I think. He huffs out some air.
You didn't even play the violin yet.
I didn't come here to play the violin, I say. And I don't need to play it. I'm a prodigy. I know what I know. You don't lose something like that. It comes out bitter and defensive.
You don't sound so sure, he says.
I shift my weight onto my other foot. My hip is sore from the fall, and I really want to sit down. But I refuse to go back upstairs and hide away in that bedroom. I want you to take me upstairs and stay with me, or I want your ending. You don't revise an ending. If you have to revise it, then it's a lie. Are you lying to me? He pauses. And that is what makes up my mind. I stumble down the hallways towards him. I know he's at the top of the stairs. And when I crash into his hard body, feel the softness of his t-shirt, I get such a sad feeling. I pull away, spin, and then my foot hits the top step, and I fall.
Chapter 40. Ixion.
I catch her by the arm, jerking it hard enough to make her cry out in pain and just barely prevent her from toppling over and falling headfirst down the stairs. Stop, I say, my heart beating fast at the near-fatal accident that almost happened. Just fucking calm down and stop. No, she says, jerking her arm away. She turns and I see a massive bruise forming on her hip. It's ugly, already deep purple and swollen.
I'm going downstairs.
Then take off your fucking blindfold, I say, reaching for it. Her hand grabs mine, hard. Well, I mean, hard for such a tiny hand.
Do not, she seethes. Remove my blindfold.
Why are you doing this? I ask. Why are you being so fucking difficult? She opens her mouth to say something, then pauses to take a breath and tries again.
It's not over yet, she whispers. I want more time here.
No one's kicking you out, I say.
No, but you're leaving. I can feel it. So either help me down the stairs or get the hell out of my way.
She shoves me to make her point, and then her foot is hovering over empty space. I pull her back a second time. Fine, I hiss. Fine, I'll take you down the stairs. Just be fucking careful, will you?
I will.
Her voice is soft through her smile. She steps very carefully as I lead her, much more carefully than she was before. And the fear I had begins to fade. She will not fall and break her neck. She will not stumble into a 100-year-old window and cut herself to pieces. She will be fine. Unless, that is, I fuck her up again. I hesitate when we get down into the grand foyer. Where do you want to go now?
Outside, she says. I want to sit on that swing with you.
Evangeline, I growl. You're completely naked. It's 19 degrees outside. We're not going outside.
I'm kidding.
And then she giggles. Like, actually giggles. As if trying my patience was the cutest thing she's ever done in her life. I smile, reluctantly. Maybe not so reluctantly. I'm going to miss her.
You seem to think I need to practice. So take me to that violin. You might as well be the first person to hear me play in a decade.
I stay absolutely still. Probably even hold my breath.
Ix, she says. Did you hear me?
I nod, exhale, then clear my throat and say, yeah. Yep, it's down here. Stay close to me. I don't want you to fall again. Her small hands wrap around my bicep, squeezing like she never wants to let me go. I'm so sorry. I want to say, I'm so sorry you're part of this game. If I could take it back, I would, but I can't. But I can. Because I'm a coward. And not only that, I'm playing as well. I'll make it up to you, I promise. There are no more incidents as I lead her down the hallway to the library, and I can't help thinking back to that first day I came here. How wrong I was to assume that her instrument would be the most interesting thing in this house. I pictured her unable to leave it behind when in reality she had almost no interest in it at all. My intuition, my infamous intuition, failed me. How many other things have I gotten wrong? Do you want to stand in front of the window? I ask. Because I feel like I have no idea who she is right now. I can't even begin to predict what she wants out of this night.
No, she says. I want you to sit on the couch. It's yellow, right? Crushed velvet? Something my mother would hate because it's too romantic.
I stare at the yellow couch and remember back to her first night here. When she was in a blind panic. When she raced to the bathroom to hide. When she came out, wandered around, and then crumpled to the floor after she saw the violin waiting for her. While she slept, shivering with cold, desperately trying to cover herself with a blanket that would never be able to cover enough. How she never came back to this room again. How wrong I got it. How badly I have already fucked this up. How she might take the gift I'll give her but never forget why I gave it. I like it, I say, referring to the couch. Because I do. It's not something my mother would have liked either. And it hurts a little to think that, because it means we're different. That I was always different.
Get me the violin,
Evangeline says, standing right in the place I put her in the middle of the room. Okay, I say, prying her fingers from my arm before walking over to get it. When I pick it up, I'm reminded of how light this instrument actually is. Mostly hollow, mostly air, nothing but thin wood and thinner strings. I take the bow and a little container of resin Evangeline will surely want and bring it all over to the couch.
Good, she says. Now sit.
It's not an order, not a command, not a request either. It's just what she wants. So I sit because I want to give her what she wants tonight. And she sits on my knee, perched off to the side a little with her back straight and her legs closed. And her hands reaching out. I place the violin in them, and it's like she inflates immediately, Her chin lifts to accommodate the instrument. Her shoulders square as one set of fingers find the strings, and the other set holds the bow. She sucks in a breath, like she's about to play a flute instead of a violin.
"Now listen," she whispers. "Don't miss the gift I'm giving you."
When that bow touches those strings, the room is immediately full. The tone starts out deep as she begins some once well-rehearsed Evangeline Rolaine version of a scale. Her fingers fly, picking up and coming down on just the right string as her bow slices through the air in just the right way. And the heavens open up inside this almost empty room as she proclaims that in this singular, elegant way, she owns the entire fucking world. She is poetry incarnate. The beauty she creates makes me want to die from joy. The notes reverberate off the wood-paneled walls. The music takes over my mind, and my body submits to her spell, and there is no way anyone who hears her music could ever miss the fact that this girl, frightened as she was, lonely as she was, sad that she was, is nothing but a genius. And with that realization, I understand. She no longer needs me.
Chapter 41. Evangeline. I feel his sigh the moment the music starts. I feel him give in. His whole body relaxes even as mine tenses up, and it's an analogy, really. How two people can be in the same room, experiencing the same thing, and discover two very different feelings lurking inside them. I am nothing but power when I play. I am who I am, completely whole, thoroughly complete, absolutely, conclusively, filled up. All the years between then and now melt away. None of them matter anymore. There is no fear of watchful eyes. There is no sadness of dreams never realized. There is no remorse or regrets or shame or guilt. There is only us, here, now, together. Me and my music. I stop that thought as soon as I have it. Because that was my problem in the first place. The possession the music holds over me. The enchantment I have with myself. I am singular when I play. A small girl who rules the entire world. I am nothing but one. And I don't want to be one anymore. I want to be two. He did that for me. He gave me back my life. He made me see that I am not alone. I am not the center of the universe. I am not the culmination of millions of lives lived over thousands of years. I am just one soul in a sea of souls, all looking for their purpose. And it's not fair that I was born with mine. It's not fair. I know that. Have always known it. But I didn't care. And I was used, and I was cheated, and I was nothing but my parents' golden opportunity. But I let them do that. I liked it. And there's always a little more responsibility one can take, even if they are 8, or 10, or 15, or immortal, like me. Because even after I die, I will live on. It's not the world's fault I am who I am. It's mine. I can either learn to live with the responsibility or suck people dry with my expectations. I don't want to be a taker. I don't want to exsanguinate the world with my power. I don't want to die alone. Lonely, and leave the world with nothing but the memory of music. I want to share my gift with him forever. So I force myself to slow down. The improvised, powerful scale that fills the room to capacity turns into a sweet, soft melody that begs to be heard. I make myself small. I make myself part of the world around me instead of overtaking it. I meld into something altogether new, as my bow now caresses the strings like a long-lost lover. Ix lets out a breath, like he was holding it in, like the music I make was forcing him to do that, the power of my talent holding him captive. But he's free now. Practice does make perfect. His hands wander to my breasts, which wiggle slightly with the swaying motion of my body as I play. He pinches my nipple, and I can feel his excitement growing against my bare thigh. I stay slow and small. Let him become big and hard. Let him fill up the room with his masculine strength. Draw from it. Smile. Yes, I say. Touch me everywhere. Take anything you want.
You don't want to give me that power, he says. His voice is low, like the notes coming from my fingers.